Greetings, every soul. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love, and we're going to have an interesting guest today, Eva Herr, and she's the author of Agape, The Intent of the Soul. Agape is actually a Greek word meaning unselfish love of one person for another. And the book, this book by Eva discusses at length the life of the soul, humanity, the dimensions of reality, mass consciousness, the incredible power of thought, and the manifestation of physical reality and health. Eva's a medical intuitive. I would say she's a spiritual intuitive also. And we're going to be asking her some questions today about the consciousness of love. This is our Valentine's Day program, you might say. And this subject is really kind of the heart of the subject of cosmic love. And I'm really grateful to have Eva on today. Are you there, Eva?
Thank you, Christopher. I'm honored to be here. Really, thank you.
I'm really glad to have you. Eva actually has her own show on BBS Radio, and she interviews leading experts on the leading edge of science and metaphysics, and she actually has a book in the works on consciousness, actually it's the subject of you might say it, the scientific dimension of consciousness, bridging the gap between conventional science and the new super science of quantum mechanics. One of my favorite subjects, quantum physics, the quantum shift of energies of Earth at this time. I've been interviewing different authors on this subject, Eva, the last this last year. In general, in the last several shows in particular, the subject of conscious evolution, and I realized reading your book, Agape, The Intent of the Soul, and the book draft that you've got, this book coming out on consciousness, I'm really fascinated with your insights, you might say, beyond the physical constraints of physicality, the physical sciences as we know them.
It's my passion. I can't help it. It's like I can't get enough.
Yeah, I feel that same way. To me, this is good as it gets. Conscious evolution, that is the theme that the last several authors have spoke on, and your book really has taken it to another level, another frequency. And I think there are many people listening to the show that have read about you on the Cosmic Love website, the introduction I've given to you. I've looked at your book link. I'm sure there's many that can resonate with this message now more than ever before, and that's actually what I wanted to discuss at this time. My intuitive, you might say the passion that I feel is, and this is kind of a razor's edge, if you know what I mean. You know, how you walk the fine line of revelation regarding Earth changes, the big shift, energy changes, consciousness changes, and how you step it down so it's more of a common sense, I wouldn't say warm and fuzzy, but at least people can get a grip of the concepts without them being too abstract, and deal with the big subject, the big picture of, let's say, Earth changes, quantum energy changes, galactic alignment of our solar system as it's passing through the galactic plane, apparently, from what I understand with the Mayan calendar, and I've had must be a dozen authors on this subject this last year. But what's going on with the energetic change? How is it affecting consciousness or DNA? What are the portents in 2011 that people can deal with? You know, when I say that, it's like I'm really, my passion has been to, and maybe it's the old Eagle Scout in me, to help people be prepared. not just physically, but spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. But you know, there's a how to be prepared, you know, in one's heart of hearts for what's coming, you know. And
the first thing that comes, somebody asked me this question yesterday, a woman did, and the first thing that I can say, the most important thing that I can say, is to get rid of the materialism in your life.
Yeah.
Because it's going to go at some point. And I live in Dunwoody, Georgia, which is kind of like an affluent neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not affluent. I'm just a normal woman. I'm a single parent, you know. But the people around me are. And my daughters, when the economy crashed, there's been more foreclosures in the neighborhood where I live than any other part of Georgia.
Really?
Because everybody was living in these, and my house is not a million-dollar house, but there are a lot of million-dollar houses around me. And but all these people were driving these fancy cars and living in these million-dollar houses, and their children only would get clothes from, you know, American Eagle or whatever the thing is. People were living to the edge of their credit cards.
Yeah.
So when things started getting bad, it didn't take anything for them to go crashing down.
Yeah.
And then,
it's happening in Montana, too. People refinancing their house to pay off
everywhere.
Their credit card debt and getting over-leveraged, you know, over-mortgaged. And then, you know,
yeah,
now.
Well, yeah. This real estate agent, who's the one that asked me this question, is they said she has 1,800 foreclosures on her desk right now.
Wow.
And she said... Well, back to what I was saying about my daughter, when you live that lifestyle of materialism, and you, even though you think that you're walking a conscious path, but you're still living materialism and it starts crumbling underneath you, those are the kids who suffer first, because they go from one polarity to the other polarity, and
uh-huh.
they're not expecting it. Just suddenly, everything that has gone, that, you know, a landslide happened, and everything that they've known as their life is gone. So if for that particular question that you're asking, what do we do to be prepared? Live simply, live
yeah.
frugally. You know, walk, live a simple life, because the more simple the life that you live, the less traumatic that it's going to be when things crumble.
Yeah. Well, I was really inspired by your book, Agape, The Intent of the Soul.
Thank you.
And there's a lot of subjects that you address, and I think anyone that is moving in that direction of living simply and getting back to basics, reading that book, I really believe there is a lot of trigger concepts that anyone has pure intent, you know, reading about the intent of the soul. I really believe that anyone reading that will trigger, you know, you might say, and my expression is pay attention with pure intention for evolutionary ascension.
Well, you know, sorry, go ahead.
That's okay.
I was going to say, when I wrote that book, I didn't have an intention to write a book. You've read the book, so you know what happened.
Uh-huh.
You know, some traumatic things happened to me, which interesting, you know, I had a dark night of the soul. Which
right.
interestingly, everybody, every luminary that I've spoken to on my show, who
has gone through that.
They always go through a dark night of the soul before they have a spontaneous epiphany. And
yeah.
then after that, they seem to have 2-year periods of times where they'll have bliss and then misery. It's like a swing,
yep.
you know, it's polarity. A swing goes however high that you swing in the oak tree, it's going to go that far backwards. So, you know, I'd had a dark night of the soul, and something happened that caused that book to come about. And I literally, you can tell the part that I'm writing, because there are two parts to that book.
Yeah.
The first part that tells the story of what happened, and then there's the second part that's the information I got. And if, when you read it, you can see that it's two different uses of language.
Yeah, and
you know what I mean?
It's very clear that you were learning how to connect, you might say, with, I call it, you know, higher conscience or higher self. How to connect with a higher frequency. Some people would say how to connect with an overshadowing spirit or frequency, where you could resonate with a higher truth, and it was transpersonal.
It took me a decade almost to integrate what happened and really understand it.
I had an experience like that back in 1970, and it's been decades for me coming around to doing cosmic love to connect with people who are into cosmic love. What you're describing to me is the path of the wounded healer. That you experience a wound, and in healing yourself, you go on to heal others. And
I think, even just because, everybody thinks because you have an enlightenment experience or if you, wake up to the degree that I did, that you're supposed to, or Eckhart Tolle or the Dalai Lama.
That's
that
right.
That you're going to stay in bliss, and that's not true.
That's not necessarily true. You're right.
Don't tell me that the Dalai Lama doesn't get depressed because he's kicked out of his country and his people has no home.
That's right.
He does. It's just his perspective changes. That's the thing that changes about us, and it's not that we're special or that we're different. We stop living so passionately to one extreme or the other. Because that's polarities, and anytime
that's
you have
right.
polarity, you're going to have some energy.
Than,
you're going to have energies coming and going. You need to walk that middle line.
Yeah, that's that thin line. That thin line I was talking about. The pure intention, the intent of by and for the soul, is what I got out of your agape. Is what really centers and connects. I think I refer to the center. Or the eye of the hurricane, it's harmonious calm in the center, and we tend to get off center and get caught up in the swirl, and we lose that all-seeing eye of the hurricane of harmonious calm, and we get caught up and we cycle and we tend to my expression is the most difficult thing in the world is to become non-attached to worldly things.
Well, I think that we start out that way. We were conditioned as a child to live in physical reality. We're not taught as children that we're spiritual beings having a physical existence.
Uh-huh.
We're taught that most fundamental religions do teach you that there's the spiritual side, but they teach you this damning, fearful, judgmental God, most of them. And it's not that way. Fritz Popp and many of the scientists have proven, Gary Schwartz out in Arizona, they have proven that we're beings of light. Fritz Popp did the experiment where he had the 2-inch stalk of corn, and he put it in a Faraday cage and used a special kind of microscope kind of thing that he could see large things. And what he saw instead of a 2-inch stalk of corn was an 8-foot stalk of corn in light.
Really?
That 2-inch stalk of corn literally grew into that 8-foot stalk of light. So
in other
it
words,
proves
there was
that
a,
we are beings of light. And so,
you know,
the more that you feed photons into your body, the more that you're going to be able to feel better, have more health, and have more vitality. And photons is that positive thing that connects you with someone else. Through the quantum entanglement. So having that done, it's the thing where love is exchanged, where the feelings of the heart connect. That's how they do that, through your electromagnetic field and photons. So if you get so that you can walk that middle line and stop living so much in physical reality, but more observing what's going on around you. Oh, that happened today. I like to tell this little story because it teaches people we really don't have the free will that we think that we have. Imagine yourself as a 2-year-old sitting in a car seat, strapped in the back seat with a little yellow steering wheel. You're very happy. You think that steering wheel is driving that car, and you're doing what Source is doing. You're doing what Mom's doing or whatever you want to call that higher power.
Uh-huh.
And you come up to the stop sign, and the grocery store is on the left, and the playground's on the right. whose steering wheel is going to work? It's not going to be yours. If you had complete free will, your steering wheel would work, but it doesn't. So what you do have free will over, which where your complete free will really lies, is in how are you going to react to that fact that your steering wheel is not working. You know, do you throw a fit and get a spanking, or do you go, okay, my steering wheel is not working, and we're going to the grocery store today, we're not going to the playground. You accept it. You accept it, whatever's in front of your face, as what is. Because what is all there is, and you're not going to change it. You know, thought does manipulate reality, but only if you're in, like, a very cohesive state. And if you want to read about that, you can look at HeartMath's work. When your field is very cohesive and you're maybe in low theta or high delta, you can manipulate physical reality very subtly. You're living today what you created 10 years ago. So, you know, the Cadillac's not going to plop down in your front yard. And then when you do start learning how to manipulate physical reality, you know, learn how to get very focused meditation so that you can create. If you're not careful and don't put the longitude and latitude into your meditation once you get into that low theta or high delta state, then you manifest pieces of your Cadillac all over the world like a puzzle blowing in the wind, and you have to go and collect those pieces and, you know, put the Cadillac together in the front yard.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's important to understand that because people walk around. I did the same thing when I first woke up. I remember I was talking to my teacher, Satyam Nadeen, and I was going, he was telling me something that I didn't want to hear. I don't remember what it was, but whatever it was, I knew everything because I just woke up, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how people are when they first wake up. They're going to change the world. You know, they know everything. Well, now I know nothing. I realize now that I know nothing.
The more you realize you just don't know.
Yeah, the more I learn, the more I know to keep my mouth shut. So anyway, so I said to him, you know what, that's not true. I have free will. I can manifest anything I want. He just laughed at me and told me that story that I just told you.
Yeah.
About the little yellow steering wheel. And so it's taken me 7 years of contemplating and thinking and I don't say I meditate because I don't. I really kind of walk around in a different kind of state. But it has taken me 7 years to really integrate what that means. You know, what is free will? Because that's the important thing. What is observation? Why does that make it different? What is agape? What is that thing? You know,
consciousness of love.
You know, it's the non-judgmental of you are that thing, and whatever you are doing to that thing, you are doing to yourself because there's only one energy form.
Now, the quantum physics of that, I understand, is the science that they've discovered with that the mere observation of an experiment will change the experiment. You know, with the research they've done whereby
it's like freeze frame. The electrons pop like bubbles coming up from underneath the sea. When they get on the top, it's like snapping. You know how when the bubbles bubble up from the bottom on the sea or a lake or anywhere for something breathing underneath, and then they start popping? It's like taking a snapshot with a camera. You know, it freezes that moment, and that's the moment that comes into physical reality.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense, they pop in and out.
And they've used atomic accelerators and observing the streams and the action of these subatomic particles, and that was part of the research that they found out was that when they observed it, you know, the patterns would change, and they would record it just by itself, and it'd be one thing, but the observation of quantum particles, which would change the patterning, you know, when there was conscious observation, and it has the same effect of when you're, you know, the field of conscious or the unified field of conscious individually and collectively. They found that they actually have satellites that monitor these very extremely subtle energy fields of the Earth and the morphic grids of the planet. They have different satellites measuring all kinds of different frequency bands, and they've They found that when there's a significant emotional experience in the collective consciousness of humanity, there'll be peaks and peaks in these and the frequency grids.
Are you talking about the work of Roland McCready and Elizabeth Rauscher? Is that who you're talking about? That sounds like what they're doing.
I've read about it from different sources. There are actually websites that are based on doing readings on the collective consciousness and research that they, you know, and also there's a future aspect of this also. Things that, you know, news of things that are going to happen, and there's a registering. Again, it's just this point of the mere observation of an experience individually or collectively will somehow affect the outcome of the reality. And
it's cohesiveness.
Cohesive, a resonance is another. You know,
it's how sticky their field is. You know, how sticky is the individual's field, or how sticky is the math field, the consciousness field? How sticky? How pulled together? How tight is it? That's what determines. What they're thinking, and how sticky that field is when they're thinking it, whether it's collective or individual.
And it's a really, it's back to the razor's edge too. Of how you maintain a certain level of harmonics in a unified field of any mandala. And when I say mandala, I'm referring to social networks and this whole issue of social conscience within social networks. You have the mainstream media where you have, you know, a televised event that'll go worldwide, and how that'll affect the morphic grids or the unified field energy grids of the planet, actually. And how that resonates with energies off-planet, that's a whole other issue. What's going on with, for example, in Egypt, this uprising of consciousness, this revolutionary fervor, and it was really a spirit of freedom and love. There was amazing listening to the people on NPR, you know, in the streets, talking about how they want this to be nonviolent, and I mean there was all these different expressions of how they want this to be this love of the people, you know, for a better country. The different wording of that, and I mean, as I was listening to it, and this is what I understand is, of course, going global right now. There's an instant, everywhere, interactive connection with the internet that has transcended time and space. You know, we've got the family of man in a global village now, and we're just learning to be conscious of ourselves as a whole. And this is huge, you know, in Earth's history. And whether it's the chicken or the egg, you know, whether it's the energies of the ninth wave of the Mayan calendar, which is all happening in 2011, you know, this conclusion of this great cycle of compressed time. The ninth wave is like 1/20th of the eighth wave, which is 1/20th of the seventh wave. I mean, there's a huge, those who studied the Mayan calendar, like I say, I've had about a dozen authors on this subject this last year on the show, and there's this fractal replication of time acceleration that's going on, and all the ninth wave of this calendar, according to Carl Joseph Kalman, one of the leading experts on this subject, it's all coming to completion. The entire ninth wave between March of next month, the middle of March, and through October, and the acceleration of change on the planet we've been seeing this last 10 years with the internet is just phenomenal. And whether, you know, when I say the chicken or the egg, whether it was the energetic shift of our solar system as it crosses the galactic plane, which is happening with this ninth wave, this is what the real story energetically of our solar system and the precession of the equinoxes is crossing the galactic plane of hundreds of billions of star systems are in a plane like a frisbee around the great central sun, and our solar system orbits up and through it, and this alignment is going on in this year. And whether it's the energetics that has been changing everything the last 10 years, because it doesn't happen all at once. You know, it's a gradual process. And it'll continue on for another 10 years. And you've got this going on, this energetic thing, influence, which, and we live in a sea of energy. You know, it's all just quantum energy. And this is, you know, resonating in our DNA and in our consciousness. And I like to think that the consciousness of the universe is the consciousness of God that is love, or, you know, it is a consciousness of love. It's a love that we can barely understand, or we can, you know, I love the way you approach it in your book, Agape, The Intent of the Soul, because I think the intent of the soul is really the intent of God. It is the intent of love. And it is that Greek meaning of agape, you know, unselfish love of one person for another. Well, it's the love of God for man that raises man unto God. Or, you know, and that's the way I understand it. But I'm fascinated with this idea of, again, whether it's the chicken or the egg, I don't think it's, you know, man creates the internet, but was man, is this real revolution in consciousness going on from the inside out? Is this energy changing our DNA and resonating in our DNA to where our consciousness changes, so then we create the internet? Is the internet just a kind of a reflex thing in the physical that's going on the inner, you know, in our consciousness, so that we physically can connect in a way that we've spiritually been or mentally been connected all along, but are just beginning to realize through this out-picturing on the screen of life through the internet, where we're, you know, it's like an instant everywhere, interactive, we're all connected now? These are questions that it doesn't keep me up at night. It's when I go to sleep, that's what I dream about.
About the internet?
About this phenomena of basically how we're coming back to God, a oneness. It's all connected, you know, this connectedness. And so my question I'd ask you, what I come around to is, and I don't know how much you've tuned into this or asked this question, I have a sense that 2011 is going to be a real turning point. The potential for critical mass of a level of a higher frequency of people. Pardon?
I thought you were through. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. It's just I'm coming to that point where myself and I'm sensing that there is a frequency shift, or maybe it's just me, but I'm seeing indications what's going on, not just consciousness shift, but Earth changes itself, and I follow that subject very carefully. And I've networked with a lot of people that give me more information than I want to know, in a sense, but it's at least more information as a general rule that I want to pass on to the public. And when I say that, that's that razor's edge I'm talking about, because you don't want to provide a knowing or a science about truths that are, in a sense, disturbing to our comfort zone.
What's your question?
Well, I was going to... Are you aware, or have you followed, or have you asked Spirit about the subject of Planet X in our solar system?
I don't watch TV, really.
Oh, this isn't a TV. This isn't on TV.
I don't.
Or Nibiru, or Wormwood.
My focus is quantum mechanics and human consciousness. You know,
okay.
What is the proof about who we... the fact that there is some thing that really exists? What is it? How do we prove it? What do we know about it? You know, what do we know that it can do? How can we use it for our lives? And then the other thing that I talk about is alternative medicine. I really don't know. I have opinions about what I think was you know, about critical mass, but I can't say. Obviously, I wrote something in that book, that Agape book, about it. But I have to tell you.
Chapter 33, Unmasked Consciousness.
I didn't know what the next sentence was going to be in that book until it came. I mean, excuse me. I literally, when that thing happened to me, I sat and wrote that, and I didn't know the next sentence until it came. I didn't even know this stuff existed. I wasn't studying about it. I wasn't somebody, I wasn't a woo-woo person. I wasn't metaphysical. I didn't even know metaphysics existed. It just happened.
Oh, it's pretty amazing what came through, I'll say that.
Thank you, but it wasn't me. But I did talk about 2012, and why I talked about 2012, I don't know. That's what came through. And I mean, for the longest, I do litigation for a living. I'm very black and white. And I was fearful of writing and being humiliated about writing something that I didn't know to be an absolute fact, because I'm about facts.
Yeah.
But I finally got the nerve to publish that book. And, you know, I didn't even know about the stuff, you know, it's like quantum mechanics and kindergarten language, that book.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that book is really, when I go back and read it, it's like, oh my God, this is a handbook for life for the average human being.
Yeah.
It really is. But I don't know why I picked 2012. I do have an opinion on critical mass, but I don't know if it's going to be 2011, 2012, or 2013. But I do know that something's going to happen, and I have an opinion on what I think that thing will be. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't use the language that you use. I use different language to describe it. So talking about, you know, the planet X and stuff, you know, I don't know. But I do know about critical mass, and I do understand quantum mechanics, and I do understand consciousness, so I can talk about it from that perspective.
Well, I'm really fascinated with the material you do have, and that's always been a favorite subject of mine. This subject of conscious evolution at this time in cosmic history, and I would like to think that our observation of cosmic history, you know, the big picture, you know, the larger scales of cycles of our solar system through the galaxy, and the larger cycles of cosmos, that our observation at this time could somehow affect our rising to the occasion. And the occasion, of course, is some type of foresight as to how best to model our reality along more enlightened lines.
I think that thing would be to not live a fear-based life. I mean, the way I look at it, to put it in a very simplistic term, is when you think a thought, and who knows if what I'm telling you is absolute science, nobody's going to know this, but the people that I have talked to, like Amit Goswami or Bill Tiller, said, you know what, that's as good a theory as any, but it will give somebody a concept so that they can understand thought. If let's just say that you think a thought and it's positive, well, when you think a thought, that whatever the thought is, it starts oscillating atoms, and when those atoms start oscillating, they transmit and they receive, just like a revolving door. You know, you go in and out the air. If you go in the revolving door, air goes in and out, in and out, in and out. So if you think positive thoughts, perhaps you're oscillating a proton, and it transmits and receives positive energy, positively charged electromagnetic energy, or whatever kind. Maybe there's some other kind of energy that we haven't discovered yet. Whatever it is, it's got a positive charge to it. Or if you think a negative thought, perhaps that it's oscillating an electron and sending out negative energy or some other particle that maybe we've not identified that has a negative charge. But whatever it is, it transmits and receives, transmits and receives. So those things right there, it's going to affect the mass consciousness of humanity, whether you are putting out a negatively charged thought, literally with voltage behind it. Voltage meaning how much emotion is attached to that negative or positive thought that you're having that's pushing it out and through the world through quantum entanglement. And whichever one it is, it's going to have an effect somewhere. That person, it's going to affect, like the scales of justice. eventually the scales are going to tip one way or another, whether with positively charged intention. And when I'm saying this, I'm really talking about energy that has positive charge to it, or negative energy that has a negative charge. And one day the scales are going to tip, and it's going to depend on how fear-based do we live. How much do we focus on conspiracy theories? How much do we focus on fear about if we're going to die of this or that or this or that? Because if it's a negative thought, if it makes you have a feeling in your stomach that feels kind of like it does when a policeman comes up behind you and turns on the blue light, you know, that kind of sick feeling, know that it's a negative thought. And it's got a negative charge, and it's going out in the world. So if you're trying to affect the consciousness of the world so that the tipping point doesn't go to the negative side, because whichever way it tips, my perspective is, once it tips, it's going to go very quickly, whichever way it goes. It's going to continue very rapidly down that path.
So then the question is, how do we tip it in the direction of conscious action, of kindness and love?
You treat everybody like you want to be treated, because you are that, you know, the person that you don't like, the road rage person, or right now particularly, is the Muslims are being attacked. You know,
yeah.
And I don't care one way or the other what somebody does, but that's a great deal of negativity. We are contributing to their cause.
Yeah.
By having lots of resentment. You know, you have to send positive intention or prayer or whatever you want to use the word to call it. I mean, what we are doing is contributing to the negativity in the world. We're making it happen.
So, and I think you said something to this effect in your book, is it is the conscious action of kindness and love, or the lack thereof, that can change the world. And what goes around comes around on the wheel of karma or the wheel of life. What we do to others, we will experience in this life or the next.
Another important thing is our children. What are we doing? What are we teaching for our children? You know, through the internet in particular and cell phones, we are texting our children, "I love you, see you later, have a good day, blah, blah, blah," or sending an email, "I love you, call me later, blah, blah, blah." We are forgetting to touch our children. Our children don't know what it feels like to be nurtured. And so they confuse, as they grow up, they confuse nurturing with camaraderie. So they get involved with drugs or gangs, because that's camaraderie. You know, they need something, and they know that. They know that they have a void in their life, but they don't know what it is. And it's the parents' fault. We are not loving and touching our children. And I don't mean touching inappropriately. I mean, instead of sending them a text that you're leaving for work this morning, go up to their rooms and put your arms around and say, "I love you, have a good day."
Yeah.
It makes a difference. They don't know what it feels like to be touched. They're like robotic.
That's an expression I've heard many times. Touch is the greatest love, because it's tangible, physical.
It changes your skin temperature. It changes your pulse rate. It changes the dilation of your pupils. It changes your heart rate. Many things happen just because somebody touches you with love.
Yeah. So I guess my question, what I was leading up to, is that not that I'm have seen what's going to happen in the future, but I've always been ahead of my time in being able to see. I've been always kind of an intuitive futurist visionary and able to see trendings. And I, you know, we all have different soul contracts, and I came in to understand a lot of the mysteries, the forbidden subjects or taboo subjects, and wanting you to know why, you know. And I have just had a repeating pattern of information from, you know, multiple sources on the subject of energetics of Earth changes. The parallels where Atlantis was at a former cycle when Planet X came through our solar system 3,600 years ago, 3,660 years ago. And actually, it was about four cycles of Planet X coming through, because it doesn't always create cataclysm, and it won't necessarily create cataclysm now. But I just this last week saw this video of an astrophysicist provided information for this video that someone produced about how this Planet X is called, or Nibiru, or Wormwood, or, you know, it's called numerous names in different civilizations around the Earth. And this is one of those taboo, forbidden subjects. You know, it's, you never, the mainstream media doesn't ever talk about it, or if it does, it provides misinformation, because it's just one of those subjects that, you know, what can you do about that? And, you know, if you're going to maintain harmony and order in civilization, you know, we just don't go there, because it could create panic or whatever. So I'm finding out and see this video this last week. It's a YouTube video. And actually, I think I provide a link on that on the website, down below where I introduced you on the Cosmic Love website. There's a link that goes into the power of love in the face of forbidden news, and it goes into kind of the warm fuzzy thing first, you know, with this fearless faith, you know, beyond fear. And then goes into this information. And what was amazing to me, and this is, I guess, where my question lies, of how do you deal with this subject of the science that the astrophysics explains how it's back in our solar system and crossed the ecliptic plane in alignment with the Earth and the Sun back in November when they had the Chilean earthquakes. And according to, and I've read numerous reports of this, it's actually shifted the Earth's axis about 3 degrees, and the Sun is rising a little bit earlier in the northern hemisphere because of that. But it's crossing the ecliptic in alignment with the Sun and the Earth, this Planet X, here this middle of this next month, and about 7 months, 8 months later, there, 7 months later in September, middle of September. And the amazing thing to me is this corresponds exactly to the bookends of the ninth wave of the Mayan calendar, which is all in 2011, mid-September to mid-October. You know? And these two sciences don't speak to each other. You know, Kalman, who's the leading expert in the Mayan calendar, you know, as it corresponds to the Gregorian calendar, you know, our time cycle, explains this ninth wave of the final wave of the Mayan calendar, this multi-billion-year cycle, you know, which is really the length of this Mayan calendar, and how the final of these nine waves is in these mid-September through next month, mid-March. And then I find out with this astrophysicist, this is the time that Planet X is again crossing the ecliptic in our solar system, you know, the plane, in alignment with the Sun and the Earth, and these two times, and there's reference to, you know, the potential portents for Earth changes. And I'm looking at this, and it's amazing, cosmic coinkadinky, you know, coincidence. I'm looking at it and going, that's amazing, you know, and I don't know if anyone else has seen this anyplace, but, you know, I've been kind of researching, you know, the science on both these subjects. And Kalman doesn't talk about Planet X, and the Planet X astrophysicists and the people that are into that subject don't talk about the Mayan calendar, but there's an exact correspondence in the bookends of these two events, the beginning and the end of the ninth wave. I thought that was fascinating, and you know, and I just wondered what you might have any impressions on that, what that might be saying to you.
It's, you know, I really don't know what to say. It's not my area of expertise.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair. You know,
my opinion about what to do is, it is what it is. So we submit to consciousness and accept whatever happens.
Yeah.
And not live fear based, because whatever happens happens, and living fear based will make whatever happens worse. That's all I know to
that's
say.
Right.
I mean, because I don't know about that. It's not my
I think that's the perfect counsel. Again, if our observation affects the outcome, then the observation needs to be neutral or centered in you know, connected.
Okay,
in
it's happening. What do you want to do about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's where the discernment comes in. And discernment doesn't come out of chaos. It comes out of calm or philosophic, you know, a kind of a philosophic calm. I referenced that center of the hurricane. Things may be swirling around, but if a person can't be centered, and I like to think of it as the consciousness of love. And then, again, there's a part of me that, you know, I'm responsible for what I know. And when I discover something like this, it comes to me as, well, somehow I'm accountable or responsible to reference, you know, and emphasize, you know, fearless faith as a prelude to discernment, you know, because everyone's soul contract, as I understand it, is different. Or, you know, we all came in with different soul contracts, and, you know, there's, you know, each to their own karmic balancing and becoming clear as to the best path. You can't say what that is for others. All you can do is give them an opportunity to, you know, wake up or otherwise pay attention in ways that, you know, that will bless, seal, direct, perfect, you know, one's own path. And that's all you can do. And I'm convinced that as anyone becomes more conscious of how they are conscious, you know, and is able to process their own lives as an objective observer, it's like doing a life review. It's processing. From my understanding, there's far more greater opportunity to process in this dense octave of incarnation than from the other side, simply because in this dimension you have something to work against, whereas when you're in the light, you just take the light for granted. Danian Brinkley talks about this in different ways, and I was glad to see him giving a recommendation for your book that this is a must read at the top of Agape, The Intent of the Soul. He's one of my favorite authors.
His wife actually says, you know, you're Danian's soulmate. You know that, right? Not his twin flame, not his partner, but he's my soulmate.
Really?
No doubt about that.
I've heard him speak numerous times, and he's an amazing soul.
He's a great
amazing
fella. He really is.
He's an amazing soul. And that was quite a recommendation. The Sheely, what is it, the Sheely Institute?
Norm
Sheely.
He's my mentor. Yeah, he's a great fellow too.
You know, I've had three holistic health centers, and I worked with electrodiagnostics, really advanced stuff. A guy that pioneered electroacupuncture and went on to develop the first a system of electroacupuncture that had a biofeedback interface that was developed by a guy. It was the periodic table of quantum biology, like quantum physics. It was an interface, part of a biofeedback interface that would actually have the frequency signatures of about 5,500 vitamins, minerals, aminos, homeopathics, phenolics, you know, all these different substances that it would cycle into the energetics of the etheric sheath of the body, and then with volt amps and galvanic skin response, go back into this periodic table of quantum biology and sort it out with the endocrine system, the digestive system, different systems of the body. And this guy pioneered this. He's the first one that used this Hermitian matrix or this quantum biology interface. My experience was that when someone gave someone that I worked with, that was a macrobiotic counselor with one of her clients, he gave this inspired invocation, you know, invoking angelic spirits and angels and healing masters, and the energetics of the system that it registered were just, just so dramatically, so much more information in the system. And I did this repeatedly, you know, where I would just run the scans, and then I'd have her come and give an invocation, you know, for the overshadowing presence of spirit, and with these dynamic invocations that she gave. And every time there was so much more information in the system, and this was not while touching the person. You could actually wire the person up, hook them up, and this would... It was a $33,000 system back in 1991. And this was my third holistic health center. And I worked with different aspects of holistic health. And this is when I came to understand the spiritual dimension of all this, you know, the quantum biology, the quantum energetics behind the physical are a very significant part of what's real and what, you know, the power of healing. And it can be registered. And this is, again, a point of observation, you know, that was where observation meant invocation, invocation, you might say. And I wanted to share that experience. That was quite amazing.
I was going to tell you, talking about Norm, Norm has an amazing new machine. It's amazing. It's called a Shiele Pain Pro, and it's basically a new TENS machine that does treat pain, and treats pain much better than the TENS unit that he originally designed. But a surprise has come out of it. When he uses this machine on particular acupuncture points,
and meridians,
each point does a different thing. You have to use 7 pairs of acupuncture per system that you're trying to treat. But in this particular case, what he has found is the telomeres. Telomeres shorten about or disintegrate about 1% a year. It's, you know, what makes you age, the caps on the ends of the DNA. Well, if you use this machine the way he's been using it, these certain acupuncture points to treat certain things, the telomeres have lengthened 3%.
Really?
Year. So it's literal reverse aging.
Reverse aging.
And that's, you know, not what he was expecting to happen out of this machine, but it's literal reverse aging. Instead of your telomeres shortening and your, you know, DNA strands starting to unravel, they're lengthening and literally time going backwards.
I believe that.
It's happening. I mean, he's got the test back to show it on liver enzymes. It's happening.
Well, I believe that the science of it, that, you know, I know that the acupuncture meridians, there's the knuckles on the fingers, there's the points on the toes, there's the acupuncture.
You have to do certain
acupuncture points
to achieve certain results with this machine.
They correspond to specific organ systems. And you can do those points on the ears, the toes, the hands. I mean, the body's holographic. And what is expression? The laws of God are written in our inward parts. And they correspond in a way that it just makes sense to me that if you're putting healing energy or the right resonance into this frequencies, right frequencies that correspond to the different organ systems, and there's frequencies that correspond to the organ systems just like different nutrients correspond to the different organ systems, as you know.
Well, the interesting thing about this thing is that it has an oscillation rate of 50,000 hertz, which is way above the physical body. So it's literally treating pain on the physical body with the TENS unit, but then treating disease. Like, one set of acupunctures might increase calcitonin, set of acupuncture points. And each of them, it has 14 points, but in different places. So it depends on where you put it. But one might fix a thyroid, or one might fix the hypothalamus, or one might fix the kidneys. This one that I'm telling you about fixes the telomeres caps, but it's treating it on the etheric level, so it treats it before it gets here.
That's interesting.
It's amazing.
The cause behind the cause, just like talking about that corn, that the etheric blueprint was 7 feet, you know, when that corn was just a small, or just, you know, just 7 inches or so, or what was it?
It was 2 inches that grew into 8 feet.
It's 2 inches into 8 feet. The etheric blueprint, if it's not diseased, if there's not, I think we've all got a etheric blueprint of perfection, and if somehow we can heal the pain or dis-ease or, you know, disharmony or discord, you know, the dissonance in the system and return it to harmony, then the etheric blueprint just manifests. I'd like to think that there's some way that we could outpicture the etheric blueprint for an emerging golden age. And I was going to ask you how we do that, by the way.
Tell me again.
How we manifest the etheric blueprint for a golden age. What do we do now?
I don't understand that language.
Well, when I say the etheric blueprint for an emerging golden age, I really believe that we're on the threshold of a new unity consciousness globally, that there is a new consciousness emerging, and that there is, when I say the etheric blueprint, there is a divine blueprint. It's in the etheric. It's some people are holding the immaculate concept of that blueprint of a golden age, and I've had some people explain to me, well, that's a fractal blueprint of, you know, the order of the universe, which is geometrically ordered divinity, you know, God, geometrically ordered fractal, you know.
So when you say, how do you make it manifest, yes, me? I'm not sure about your linguistics, because we speak kind of different linguistics, but...
My impure intention, of course, is to make it so, and my question is always, well, how do we best do that? How do we best...
Well, again, the answer is, there's one way to do it, Christopher.
Yeah.
And that is, treat everybody like you want to be treated, and that includes your physical actions, but in particular your thoughts, because thoughts create. And as far as fixing things, see, I view things from the non-dual state, from non-duality.
Uh-huh.
That's my perspective, you know, the non-dual. And from the non-dual perspective, there's no thing to fix. Because everything is perfect for the lessons that each individual and the mass consciousness themselves need to learn, because obviously we have created the world that exists today. We did that.
In other words,
we don't know what we need to know, so we have to learn lessons. You know, we haven't touched the stove yet to learn the lesson. We touched the stove and it wasn't turned on. So now we got to touch the stoves when it's hot to learn the lesson. I mean, people aren't learning the lessons. And the lesson simply is, there's only one lesson. Treat everybody like you want to be treated. The road rage person with thought, because they get it. The road rage person, the store clerk. You have no idea where they just came from. The store clerk that you just yelled at, or the bank teller that you yell out on the phone, you have no idea that they didn't just come from being raped or molested or spousal abuse or whatever it is. So what you think about that person, towards that person, and intend towards that person and how you treat them, that is what has created where we are today. And the only way to stop it, including Planet X, because thought create, if you can think it, it exists somewhere in the universe.
So the answer to that question of how to manifest the emerging blueprint for a golden age is to pay attention with pure attention to the emerging blueprint for a golden age that is.
Treat one another like you want to be treated, because that other one is you.
Yeah. That would be true for the masses as for a significant other.
For anybody. I mean,
for every, yeah.
Every
yeah.
single thing there is that.
Well,
I don't know if that makes sense. But.
It sure does. And I really appreciate your blend of metaphysics with the physics. That's
it's the only thing I know how to do. I'm sorry, I just don't. You know, I'm stuck in this. I'm very scientific-minded, kind of. I think that way, so I don't understand all of some of the new age.
Well, I'm still grappling with it myself, but I really appreciate your perspective, and I'm glad I was able to have you on the show today. It was really a pleasure, and I really recommend anyone listening, if you have a chance, to get Eva's book, Agape: The Intent of the Soul. or check out our show page on BBS Radio. What's the name of it again?
It's called Infinite Consciousness. It's on Sunday nights at the same time as yours, except on Sunday nights.
On Sunday nights, and that's on BBS Radio. And check out our website, and that her address is there on the evaher.com. evaher.com, excuse me.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you,
Eva. And agape to you.
Agape to you.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. Happy trails. We'll look forward to another show here in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.